You get nothing. You lose.
I've never been so high in my life.
The category is Butch Queen, Butch Queen, Butch Queen, first time in drags at a ball.
What it do, good people? Welcome to episode numero dos of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona, and joining me in the studio are film reviews editor at The Rep, Alonzo Duralde.
Hey, Ricky.
How you living, sir?
Large, as always.
Always. And guest panelist, indie producer, whoa, film festival programmer, whoa, Drea Clark. Drea, you are our first return podcast guest who's never been on the show.
What a glory.
That's right.
Such glory.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But Drea, since people have not heard your voice before, to get them in the mindset of where you're coming from, Drea, tell us your favorite movie or your favorite film genre.
Genre. I think the best way to know me is that I'm the jerk that would reply, oh, I could never choose just one. So I'm like, oh, my favorite film, but my favorite French farce, perhaps. But I also, like, if it is big and has explosions, I'll go see it.
Okay.
If it has witty, sparkling dialogue, I'll love it.
So Michael Bay.
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay is you what
you say. You heard me say witty and sparkling dialogue, right? So Michael Bay, full stop. Yes.
Well, thank you for joining us again, Drea. It's good to see you, yo.
Thanks for having me.
Sidebar, Drea dropped some electric relaxation lyrics on me, so I'm in a good place right now. I'm in a very good place. I'm going to check around and see how everybody else is doing. Alonzo, how you doing, man? What's good with you, sir?
I am kind of loving the insane new menu at the AMC theaters where you can get a pound and a half pretzel for $15. And I just want to send my love to all the AMC employees out there who have to tell the people in line they got to wait half an hour for their stone-fried flatbreads, because I know what a Saturday night at the Cineplex is like, and I used to have that job.
That's what's up. Shout out to them pretzels, yo. Shout out to them pretzels. Drea, what is good with you?
First off, the best thing is I was anxious that we would have the same good thing. And you, like, took me around the block with that. So I thank you. What's good with me is this weekend I went to the Hollywood Bowl and saw the Muppets.
Oh.
Muppets Take the Bowl. And basically just, like, snot cried the entire time.
Okay.
But apparently all thousands of other people were also snot crying but also grinning. It was a remarkably emotional experience. It was so fun. It was stupid fun. If you ever can see a singular Muppet, all of the Muppets in person, I would highly recommend it. Mm.
The Electric Teeth and the Mayhem Band?
Oh, the Mayhem were there.
Oh, you know they
were. Dr. Teeth, I was convinced he was giving me a little wink.
Why wouldn't he be? Why wouldn't he be?
Because I was so far back. That's the number one reason
he would
not be. You
thought some puppeteer was going to come out in the audience with a backstage pass?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Janice wants you to have this.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. That's what's up. What's good with me, guys? Thank you for asking.
We're just ancillary in the room. You were going to ask you anyway.
Hey, what's good?
Oh, thank you. That was so formal. Very white.
What is good?
What is good?
That's like the Jeopardy answer.
How is good for you?
I'll tell you what's good with me. My man David Simon is back. I watched the first episode of The Deuce. And I was throwing deuces up the whole time. Shout out to my man Method Man's beautiful ass coif. That shit is fire. Yeah, yeah, it's good.
You know you've got confidence in a show when you name it after slang for poop. That's when you are not afraid. It's like, come at me.
Well, guys, I would also ask April Wolf what is good as well, but she's at the Toronto International Film Festival.
La-di-da.
Fancy. Episode 2, and this show has foreign correspondents, son. We're going to give April a call a little bit later in the show. In addition to catching up with April, I got a question for you. Do you like Stephen King?
I saw something.
A clown. Yeah, I saw him too.
We are going to talk it. Plus, each of us is going to form our own 1980s movie kid gang by drafting our favorite characters from 1980s movie kid gangs. What round am I drafting my man Horace from Monster Squad? Oh, I think exactly. Go ahead. Drea raising the roof in the studio. Yes. Yes, indeedy. Yes, indeedy. It's been a minute since I kicked someone in the nards, you know, so I'm excited. I'm also excited because at the end of the show, we'll be giving staff picks, That's when we give you all recommendations for what you should be checking out at home, in the theater, what have you. But first, it's time for our news roundup game that we call It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Yeah, you. Drea, you heard it.
I didn't hear it until I heard it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I'll never not hear it.
Yeah. Here's how It a Dick works. I'll read a news blurb, a headline. Alonzo or Drea will chime in with a take by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? You guys got it? We're good?
We're good.
Got it.
Solid.
Two questions. I can do that.
All right. Big news. It is official. Patty Jenkins has signed on to direct the Wonder Woman sequel. Patty's going to be making paper. $8 million to write, produce, and direct. She is now officially the highest paid female director of all time. Is this important? Do you care?
Hell yeah.
Yes. I care on like a molecular level. For sure.
On a midichlorian level, like a Jedi.
Yeah,
son.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I want them because this means that A, they will presumably not be fucking up the Wonder Woman franchise, and B, yeah, damn right you make her the highest paid woman director ever made. And where are the other women directors getting these gigs? Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, and it's nice because it's nonsense to think of Hollywood as a meritocracy because it's not. But it's one of those things that it would have been such a colossal slap if this hadn't come together. Like, how can you not reward someone who it was very clear her vision and her ethos for how it was being approached was so part of its success? So I would have felt like, you know, sort of pitchfork in the streets mad if that hadn't happened. Although the other side of it is, of course, that was going to happen. Like,
yeah.
The excitement of people championing behind her and, like, embracing a director that's new to them and, like, getting psyched about it as a franchise. And, like, it's not just the opportunity for her as a female director, but it's also, yeah, you should be making heroes out of a whole range of people. And how cool that she is now a household name and deserves to be in this kind of continues on with that.
Their second choice, if they didn't get Patty Jenkins, was Colin Trevorrow. Like, people don't know that. Like, people know that.
Poor Colin.
Remember last week when we poured some liquor out of our lightsabers because Colin Trevorrow was fired from the Star Wars movie? R.I.P. Colin. Well, I'm thinking about you, bro. This week, Disney
See
was...
See you at the crossroads.
That's right. This week, Disney was like, yeah, that is horrible. Poor Colin. Let's initiate operation. Get J.J. Abrams here. Light speed. J.J. Abrams is back in the Star Wars director's chair. Is this important? Do you care? Ooh, that rhymed.
I don't care, but it might be important. Only in that I think it underscores that the way that Disney is going to handle Star Wars is the same way that Disney handles Marvel, which is the studio and the producer is the auteur. You know, Edgar Wright, you're too interesting. Let's bring in these really talented TV people who aren't going to mess with the formula and aren't going to give us any back talk. Sorry, Lord and Miller. Sorry, Colin Trevorrow. We're going to bring in Ron Howard and J.J. Abrams because we know exactly what we're going to get from them.
But Marvel also brought in Taika. Like, there's some leeway in terms of having a little bit of personality. I completely agree. Like, Edgar getting hamstringed was, you know, someone called it the deuce of him. You know? But that was a bummer, and it speaks to that. But I do think they maybe play a little more. To me, you're right that what this really tells me is, oh, I get it. Like, your language is you're interested in finding people who you can plug in and have them, like, execute these. And if that's the – yes, get some veteran people. Like, who cares? Truthfully, speaking of female directors, I had this whole thing this week of, like, it makes even less sense they're not looking for up-and-coming female directors because who has had to work harder to just please the authority figures than a woman working behind the director? Like,
well, didn't Kathleen Kennedy go through that whole thing where she didn't think a woman could do it and she had to sort of backpedal on that one?
Yeah.
She's like, there weren't enough with enough experience. Like the $800,000 indie of...
Yeah, like Colin Trevorrow's deep list of filmography. Yes.
Here we go. Starting in 2019, Netflix subscribers will no longer be able to stream Star Wars or Marvel titles unless they subscribe to Disney's streaming service. Disney announced it's going to move Star Wars and movie titles from Netflix to their very own streaming service, which will debut in 2019. Is this important? Do you care, or is this some Disney dark side type shit?
I think it's a dumb idea.
Thank you.
The whole cable cutting thing is going to be a lot less attractive once people discover they have to subscribe to 8 different services if they really want to get everything. And I think that the more widespread this stuff becomes, you know, it's going to, I mean, yeah, Disney of all the studios is probably the most sort of brand conscious, but it's still asking a lot of people to have their Netflix and their Hulu, both of which create a lot of original content and amalgamate a lot of different content. And then on top of it, if you want your Disney, you want your Marvel, you want your Star Wars, you have to do this. It's just, it's too much.
Tyrese posted on Instagram pleading with The Rock not to move forward with we're not even sure it's going to happen. It's a rumored Fast and Furious spinoff with The Rock and Jason Statham. They'd be playing their roles from those movies. I'm going to read you a few quotes from Tyrese's post on Instagram. Quote, I'm simply trying to reach him because he won't call me back about this Solo hashtag Hobbs movie. I want you to shoot it just right now. I want you to just shoot it, not right now, because the Fast 9 release date has already been announced. Didn't you see how huge Fast 8 was? It's because we announced and kept our release date, bruh. This story, though, guys, is this important? Do you care?
What I care on several levels. Tyrese. Mostly I care about the idea that Tyrese phrased this as a marketing suggestion. He's like, The Rock, you got to call me so we can talk release date strategy.
Yeah, come on now.
Clearly
come
Tyrese on. Has nothing else going on right. And really does not want to let this thing go. Here's my suspicion about this, because we know that they all hate Vin Diesel. Like, we know this now, right? I mean, they're all being very coy about it, but they can't take it. So there's that Ben Folds 5 song where he talks about being in a band and they broke up in May and then they reformed in June without me and with a different name. Like, I think they all want to just like, okay, we're all done. And then as soon as it's over, okay, we're all going to get back together, but don't tell Vin.
I think he much would prefer if the Hobbs standalone also included his character.
Mm. Oh, no doubt. Mm-hmm.
I will say I see all of these opening night, and as such, for Fast 5, we were at the Arclight, and we'd gotten really crap tickets, so we were in the very front, and it paid off because the entire cast came in during the credits.
Nice.
And so Tyrese has a cell photo of me and my friends, like, screaming like insane people. But the last one, the intense sexual chemistry of The Rock and Jason Statham.
Yeah.
I need to see that explored. So, like, I hope they do that. And I hope, I really want it, but, like, to completion.
Yeah, just
like,
make out
I need
already.
That. Yeah.
All right. Our final news story here. Oh, this is kind of for you, my man Alonzo over here. Mm. Who critiques the critics, son? This summer has been one of the worst box office seasons in almost 20 years, they say. And movie studios, of course, they're saying, hey, wasn't me. Not my fault. They're putting all the blame on Rotten Tomatoes. Alonzo, why are you, people like April, out here trying to ruin movies, yo?
Because we all marched down to Sony and said, you're going to release the Emoji Movie. You're going to do it. Do it.
God damn it, that's what we want.
Make it happen.
We want Hunger Strike for the Emoji Movie.
Fucking Baywatch. Make that happen.
God damn it.
We demand it.
King Arthur, where is it? Ugh. Oh, man.
Well, there's one thing on this, because I would be interested. I do think there's something about Rotten Tomatoes that the metric is sometimes weird of like, because right, like, and I'm sure for you as a critic, the idea that you would spend all of this time crafting all of these arguments, perspectives, and being like, no, you're either a tomato or a splat.
Yeah,
like,
no, I mean, yeah, there are certainly issues with the binary, you know, thumb up or down, 1 or 0, fresh or rotten. And yeah, the Rotten Tomatoes score is the number of percent is the percentage of critics who saw the film that liked it, as opposed to Metacritic, where actually they assign a 0 to 100 score for each review and average that. And you know, I get the argument where, you know, if Fandango sells a lot of movie tickets and Fandango is a part owner of Rotten Tomatoes, and so when you click on Fandango to buy your movie, it tells you the tomato score right there. That's not very good marketing, you know, because if you are trying to make people buy tickets to the Emoji Movie in King Arthur. You don't want that splat staring him in the face with a single-digit number. So, yeah, that, I guess, maybe you can pin on being a problem. But ultimately, it's like, yeah, make better movies.
Definitely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, we're at the far end of the assembly line here. The critics are dealing with the results. Y'all are in the office deciding what shit gets made and who's going to make it and how it's going to get made and how many, you know, death of a thousand paper cuts you can inflict on a good script. So don't pin this on us.
Well, that about does it for news, y'all. We just it a dick. Yeah, we did. And when we come back, we will be talking about it. We'll be right back.
I'm Allegra Ringo.
And I'm Renee Colbert. And we host a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog?
Renee, can I tell you about a dog I met this week?
I wish that you would. In turn, though, can I tell you about a dog hero?
May I tell you about a dog breed in a segment I like to call Mutt Minute?
I would love that. Could we maybe talk about some dog tech?
Could we have some cool guests on, like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Nicole Byer, and Ann Wheaton?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I'm in.
You're on board? What do you say we do all of this and put it into a podcast?
Yeah, okay.
You think? All right. Should we call it, like, I don't know, Can I Pet Your Dog?
Sure.
All right. What do you say we put it on every Tuesday on Maximum Fun?
Or on iTunes. Sounds good to me.
Meeting's over.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me today are...
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And that's what's up. Today we're going to take a look at the movie It.
My grandfather thinks this town is cursed. He says that all the bad things that happen in this town are because of one thing. An evil thing that feeds off the people of Derry.
But it can't be one thing. We all saw something different.
Maybe. Or maybe it knows what scares us most, and that's what we see.
For a quick synopsis of the film, I'm going to throw it to my man, Alonzo, who's going to tell it to us. Is it going to be like a ghost story, or should we all get up by the campfire?
So there's a small town in Maine, and they say that every 27 years, a clown shows up and takes children away. And the town doesn't do anything about it because they're all jerks. And it's a Stephen King movie, so everyone who's an adult is a dick. So the kids have to do all the work to make the clown go away. Oh my God.
That's some spooky shit, son. That's some spooky shit.
I could,
shit.
Like, picture the flashlight under your chin.
All right, well, first question, real talk. It, did it scare you?
No. Am I a jerk? I mean, yeah, sorry.
No, you're not a jerk. Okay, no, it's not scary.
I liked it, but it not as a scary movie. I mean, there are a few, like, jump scares that you can't help going, you know. But no, I kind of got into it more in terms of the characters and the relationships and the metaphor of the horror, like the whole thing about the sort of the town with the awful past that it doesn't deal with, you know, and the way that people sort of blithely ignore horrible things as long as they remain unscathed, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, this definitely takes the angle, like you said earlier, of the adults live in a completely different world than what the kids live in, and they do not want to get involved in that world at all. They just keep the kids at a distance, or they just overprotect them. All the scares in the movie just seem so telegraphed. Oh. I just felt like somebody walks into a room, we get a wide shot of what the room looks like, and it's like, okay, something's going to jump out of one of these corners. And that's exactly what happens.
It's too quiet for too long.
And
sometimes that's satisfying. Like, there's something about, there's the sequence when they have the slide projector going, and you're like, you know, it starts to be, there's this stuff with the hair over the mother's face, and then you're like, oh, for sure that's going to turn into Pennywise, and it is!
Oh,
but then, like, they did a slight change of that, and, you know, he takes the size and the ratio of his, like, that's sort of interesting. So there were kind of moments of scariness, But my my big thing, it finished, and I remember reading this and loving it when I was 13, partially because I was also the kind of kid that was like, oh, look how long it is. It must be so good.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
Like, sign me up.
It's a doorstop.
Yeah.
Like, everybody else is carrying books, comics, or things that look like this.
Yeah, and are you there? God, it's me, Margaret. Maybe 110 pages. Yeah. This, however.
We're walking out. Two hands. Absolutely. I'm with you.
Yeah. Well, I like literally followed this up with The Mists of Avalon because it was also big. It's like, this is how I was choosing my literature. But
by the pound.
Yeah, by the pound.
Did you call it literature back then as well?
I was a real asshole. Yeah. Yeah. That's good to know. But I remember reading it and a ton of my friends. And so even when this has come out, of course, the discussion has been like what you remember from it. And for so many people, it was this just a solid memory of reading it and enjoying it. And so I say all that and I enjoyed watching the movie and it finished. And I was like, well, that was nonsense, right? Like, literally, all I do all the time is try and track narrative threads in movies. And like, that was straight nonsense. Like, in terms of, for me, the mythology of Pennywise and of, there were things that I loved so much. Like, I loved the idea of, and it's been done in so many, I mean, even Harry Potter did it, of like, your fears are reflected in the demon coming at you.
Yeah.
And they, some of those were so beautiful, like the girl and the blood and the hair and like her fear of womanhood and femininity in general and you're knowing why, like the real ugliness behind that, that those were amazing moments. But also I'm like, but then when we see him and there's sort of that like Victorian like clown proscenium, like a stage that he's got, I'm like,
yeah,
wait, does he keep reverting back to a clown for a reason? Like, he's established as a shapeshift. What's the thing with the why are they floating? There's nothing.
He's always a clown because everyone's afraid of clowns. Yeah.
At one point,
everyone.
There's like a drawing from like whatever, like the 19 whatevers, and it's all just like normal people, and then one dude who's dressed as a clown, and it's like, how come nobody's noticing
it's like the Simpsons cast picture. You know, there's the one clown if you look for it. You know?
But I also, and I would be interested in, like, the idea of Derry as this, of a town that has, like, rich in these secrets. But I also was like, oh, every single time I see Derry, it's full sunlight. It's, like, just idyllic. There's literally, like, a bandstand with children
gazebo,
and families, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, wait, is it a creepy town or is it a town in denial? Is it, and they sort of intimate things, but I was, you know, the idea of, like,
yeah, I think that they're so in love with the kind of like, because they moved the action of the story from the 50s that it was in the book to the 80s.
Yep.
And so they're so loving the kind of like Spielberg-y, Stranger Things-y, you know, like kids on bikes thing. Yeah, they don't show Derry as being a shithole. So it's sort of like, well, is it this sort of Nicholas Sparks small town or is it, you know, the White Ribbon? Like, what are we dealing with here? But I think that kind of works in the,
wait,
you know.
Can we pause and give you 1,000 points for those, working those two references into one sentence?
Absolutely.
It's amazing. Why I'm here.
Yeah.
I think that that's effective because, yeah, it is a town in denial and it is a town that's trying to pass itself off as being like all American, everything's all hunky-dory, but there are these horrible bullies and there are these sadistic parents and there are, you know, and there's this tortured history of factory fires and, you know, like cops, you know, killing, you know, black people in nightclubs and whatever else that that Pennywise is this manifestation of.
That those are all things. It made a shit ton of money.
So
it made a shit ton of money. And all those things, it falls into this Stranger Things nostalgia world that we're all living in.
When kids were on bikes and not looking at goddamn computer screens all day playing their video games.
But it's not just kids. Like, one of the things that's interesting about it is, like, I loved the kids in this. All of the Stand By Me stuff, like, they're so well cast. They're great performers. The comedic timing's there.
The kid profanity
there
is just right.
Yes.
And that is hard.
Yes.
Like, there are kids that cannot say fuck in a funny way. And, like, we know those kids. But
fuck those kids.
I was thrilled for this film to make so much money because I'm like, yes, make more studio big money horror. Like, I'm all for that. But I also, even while it was happening, I'm like, but who is the audience for this? Because, but it is. I'm like,
apparently everyone.
Everyone. And I do think the nostalgia is it's, to me, very neatly dovetails with what a garbage pile the world seems like right now.
Sure.
And you're like, oh, well, this is garbage world for a reason, because they're haunted and it's not just like politics and, you know, people arguing and
they
just
didn't
nightmare
elect the clown.
Things. Exactly. That he just found them.
Right.
And so I feel like there's an escapism tied to this nostalgia even more than is normally the case.
The negative thing that I didn't like from the nostalgia aspect was it felt like they were rehashing all of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies into one. It's Pennywise is Freddy. The adults are the adults who killed Freddy, who don't want to talk about what they did. Mm. The town is cut off from everybody else. Just like Freddy feeds on your dreams, feeds on your fears. Pennywise feeds on your fears. Everybody gets a set piece as to what their specific fear is.
Plus, they had the two Nightmare on Elm Streets on screen.
and they did
the
that.
Yeah, they did.
They didn't have Nightmare on Elm Street 3, and like, no. That's the go-to, yo.
Yeah,
that's
they
the
started with Come 5, which was just yeah, a bold choice.
I was like, 5? Okay, all right, I guess.
Time and place, people. Time
and place. That's true. I would argue, though, to me, because I love the Nightmare on Elm Streets, and that
sure.
was like 7th and 8th grade every single weekend. I had an exact order of preference. 5 came third.
Okay. Okay.
But the difference with that is, like, you were just able to crystallize Freddy's thing of, like, oh, Freddy did this, he was killed by this, he's getting back by this, and they're dying by this. Whereas with It or with Pennywise or whatever it is, I'd be like, well, I think he's a thing, and then, but he can be a lot of things. And
well, there's the scene where he has our hero, where he has Billy captured, and he basically tells the other kids, give me this one, walk away, pretend this never happened, you'll have great lives. And you get the impression that once a generation he's given that speech to other people, and they've said yes, and they've accepted that bargain, and that's why everything is so fucked up in this town. And these are the ones that are gonna go against the grain and be like, no, we're sticking around, we're gonna kill you because you have our friend.
See, I wish I would have gotten a sense of that, because I like that sentiment. And I like, and I did, like, the stuff of, okay, so what we're fighting him with is if we all stick together, he can't get us. But then it was also like, well, what counts as a quorum with this? There's
yeah.
like
a minion.
7 of you,
yeah.
right? Like,
yeah.
So if, you know, a couple don't come, or like, you know, you guys splinter off, like, and then the lack of fear and him feeding on fear, it just was like, again, I'm making it sound so critical because I truly enjoyed watching it,
yeah.
but it finished
and
I was like,
you start asking questions,
yeah.
and then, wait a minute.
Question mark, question mark, question mark.
Because of the appeal of the whole 80s-ness of it, I'm wondering how the inevitable sequel, where they do the other half of the book where these characters are all adults, and the way that everything's been moved up, it's now going to be taking place in 2016.
And Jessica Chastain is going to play the girl.
She better.
Hey, this
guy directed Mama, so
exactly,
they have a history,
exactly.
you know.
I'm 100%. I'm 115% fine with Jessica Chastain playing Beverly. But the whole time I was watching, I was like, that's just little Amy Adams.
Yeah, that's what Dave kept saying,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. I was
yeah.
like, look at little Amy Adams the whole time. Yeah.
But
yeah.
anyway, so my question is,
yes.
when It Chapter 2 rolls around, because it's not kids and because it's not the 80s, will it register with audiences as much as this one has, or will just everybody go because they like this one and they want to see how it ends?
I think your first part is, you mean when they separate it into two and release it as two movies?
No!
Because if you think
no.
they would try
they always
and
do
it.
Now.
Oh,
yeah.
I hope
you
they
all,
better not
you're
do that.
Remember all
Hunger
these questions.
Games.
Yeah, I'll be
when
salty.
Part 9. Yeah, exactly.
I will be salty if they do that. I do
yeah.
not want that to happen at all. Give me one movie. 2 hours and 50. Just, exactly. just like this one. 2 hours and 17 minutes. I'm fine.
But you were saying something. He had a legit point.
I was saying something?
You were.
What was I saying?
About if it comes into the 80s and they're adults, will the audiences still be as excited?
It's
contemporary times.
No, I don't know.
I think they will if they keep, because as, here's another thing that I enjoyed about the movie. It never felt like the nostalgia was being shoved down our throats like Stranger Things does, and I'm fine with how Stranger Things does it.
Sure.
I'm totally fine with how Stranger Things does it. But in this movie, We get some solid New Kids on the Block jokes.
Yep.
We get little Young MC in there. Mm-hmm. And we get some movie billboards
some
in the back.
Boxes,
and
yeah.
that's pretty much it. You know, it's not like this running, oh, I just dropped my Trapper Keeper.
I'm going to lean
what?
Over. Can you hand me my Rubik's Cube?
Yeah, exactly.
I just spilled my tang.
Exactly.
Oh, no, I got slime all over everything. question for you, Ricky.
Yeah.
A thing that did strike me in this movie, and I'm wondering if it's part of this sort of ongoing trepidation that non-black filmmakers have in dealing with black subjects, i.e. Sofia Coppola. We have the black kid in the Losers Gang. He is tormented by the bullies. They are terrible to him. They beat him. They do all kinds of stuff. Nobody says the N-word.
Yes.
Did that not strike anybody?
Absolutely.
As, like,
absolutely.
A cop-out?
100%.
Very weak.
Well, they referred to him as the homeschooled kid.
Like, I thought that was
because
weird.
Because I was like, I think you're referring to the black kid and the fat kid, yeah. And what you're saying is the homeschooled kid and the new kid.
Yeah.
I don't know why all of a sudden, like, these guys all have one thing that you've given them.
Yeah, when movies do that weird thing where they talk about everything but the issue,
yeah.
I'm like, how come that guy's not screaming the N-word right now? Because then that's what I want to happen. I'm like, he knows every word except the N-word? That is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there's that amazing scene in 42 where Alan Tudyk plays the racist baseball player who's coming after Jackie Robinson and just unleashes this torrent of, like, the most horrifying hate speech ever. And it's hard to listen to, but it's supposed to be. And
exactly,
yes. And it has an impact and it means something in that moment. And I just thought, we gotten to a point where we can't even correctly contextualize that word to show the horrors of how this kid, the one black kid in a town in Maine, is being treated.
Yeah,
and it's an R-rated film that they're cursing in plenty. There wasn't like, oh, well, we didn't, you know, we made it for kids, so like
right.
The monster clown movie.
Right.
Now I have a question that I want to bounce off of what you're saying there. Because there's also that scene in the book that does not happen in the movie.
Yeah, I'm not mad about them leaving the tween gangbang out.
I'm not. I didn't want to see it. I mean, I don't want to see that. But are you okay with how they handled it? Are you okay with changing such a dramatic?
Oh, yeah.
Ending in a book for that.
It's an ending, but it's not, because it's also, they changed it, but they changed a lot of small things, like
That's such a big thing.
He wasn't. It is a big thing, except for.
And I'm not defending this. I want to make this very clear.
We get it. You want to see the child sex. That's fine. But like, there
chapter
is,
two, though.
Yeah. Hold your hopes up.
When they're adults, sure, bring it.
Yeah.
But there was something, like, I had a whole running commentary with a group of friends of mine about that, because I've actually brought that up for years, because the amount of people, like I said, who've read this book, and then I'll be like, all right, in this scene, the blank face, the people who have blocked it out and been like, what? What are you talking? I read that book like 4 times. I have no idea what you're talking about. So many people thought I was like punking them. I'm like, I'm not that imaginative. Like, trust me. For me, it was a welcome excising of it. I think in a strange way, I wish they would have replaced it with something, because if anything, for a narrative thread, if it was supposed to be giving us, like, oh, that's what Beverly is bringing to the squad, like, is as a fulcrum. Oh my god! By the way, not gross, but as like a, you know, like, she's connecting with people on an emotional level, or like, you know, helping build morale or whatever. And again, that is never combined with like 11 or 12 year old sex offerings, but if they had taken
what the hell were we reading when we were 11 or 12?
Bonkers.
Jesus Christ.
But it's also because in the book, she instigates it, which is double nonsense.
Yeah.
And look, this is Stephen King. It's not John Steinbeck. I'm perfectly okay with like messing with the text and not, you know, being super faithful to it. I'm fine with the blood oath we get in the movie. That, to me, I think does the same thing in terms of registers that bonding. It demonstrates the sort of the them being brought together, them understanding that, you know, they need each other in this way. And I without the prepubescent boning, yes.
Shout out to my DJ prepubescent boning.
For sure. If anything, I'm grateful the amount of people that have discussed that scene this week. And I'm like, yes, please use this as one of those opportunities to revisit all of the pop culture you consumed at a young age. And look at how that shapes your identity and what you expect of things. There's a single girl in this entire effing squad, like, great. And what does she bring to the... Oh, sex. Good, good. Oh, she's also abused. Fun. We have fun. Like, and those aren't things you're thinking of when you're 13. So by all means, think of them now.
I want to backtrack to Pennywise, if I could real quick. How did everybody feel about how Pennywise did? I mean, you immediately want to make the comparison.
I missed
Tim
Curry.
Of course. Yeah, Tim Curry. He set the standard.
Yeah, I thought he was great. Tim Curry is the reason, and then this movie backed it up, why I hate the name Georgie so much. Like, that spittle that was coming out of his
George.
Oh my, don't do. Oh my God. Sorry, I
didn't mean to trigger
you. It's a very small room. It's a very small room. I really liked Bill as much as I can only explain Pennywise as being nonsense, because it just, I liked his physicality. I liked what he was
good.
Doing.
But once you go Curry, you never go back.
Sure, sure.
Thank you. Thank you. That's been our discussion about it. Well, how about we let the people know what they should do now? Should they screen it, stream it, or skip it?
Say it right.
Should they screen it? Should they stream it? Or should they skip it?
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I think this is kind of, it's more fun in the theater.
I agree. I would say screen it because it is a movie that I think it is enhanced by that, you know, crowd of strangers in the dark experience.
And also they really need the money, you know.
They're hurting right now.
Give this baby studio.
Really hoping they make it.
Well, yeah, I agree with y'all. Screen it. And then when it comes out, stream it. And if you know anybody who wants to skip it, cancel them, yo. Don't hang out with them at all. When we come back, April Wolf, she's in Toronto. She's going to tell us everything that's happening at TIFF. And plus, we'll have our staff picks for you. We'll be right back.
What's a great French film about lady cannibals?
What's the song of the summer?
How do you say cheese in Spanish?
What should I binge watch next?
Hey, how did Crash win Best Picture? I'm still mad about that.
For answers to these questions and so much more, come on over to Pop Rocket, a pop culture roundtable show with me, Guy Branum.
Winter Mitchell.
Margaret Wappler.
And Karen Tongson.
Catch us every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you decide to get your podcasts. I'm not going to judge.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me today are...
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duraldi.
April thought she could avoid us by going to Canada. She was mistaken. I'm going to call her right now and see what she's been up to.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
April is at the Toronto International Film Festival. Right off the bat, be honest with us. How drunk are you right now?
Oh, my God. Not right now.
Well, for our listeners out there, the Toronto International Film Festival is one of the big, important festivals, right, April? This is one of the highlights of the festival circuit this year.
Yeah, it's one of the big ones for the fall season. You start getting a lot of Academy Award qualifying films, you know, that are trying to make the slot build buzz and get a theatrical release before the end of the year. So that's kind of what you're seeing at TIFF every year.
What are you digging out there?
I am loving a comedy called The Death of Stalin, and it's by Armando Iannucci, who is the director of the show and creator of Veep on HBO. So it's an amazing political satire. I laughed in every single scene. It is so funny. It's Steve Buscemi, Michael Palin, Jeffrey Tambor, Andrea Riseborough, so many amazing, talented comedic actors in the same room. And it actually looks really beautiful. It's a comedy that looks really good, but it's about the last days of Stalin's life.
Sounds hilarious.
I was going to say, yucks aplenty. April, when I was at the Venice Film Festival.
Oh, here we go. Recently. Here we go.
I'm just organically dropping into the conversation. Everybody went bananas for Del Toro's The Shape of Water, and I'm wondering if it's playing as well in Toronto.
It is, and I loved it. I didn't have the same kind of emotional connection to it that some other folks had, but I still thought it was a beautiful film that, you know, tackled film history and also tackled big subjects like racism, ableism, sexism,
homophobia, big one.
It's amazing how much ground he was able to cover in this film. You know, social rights thing.
Yeah, if people haven't seen it, it's basically Creature from the Black Lagoon retold as a classic Hollywood love story.
I want my eyeballs on it.
it's gorgeous. And Sally Hawkins plays a mute woman in the lead character. And she's great. Richard Jenkins, Octavia Spencer, Michael Shannon. It's a delight.
Oh, you guys, Michael Shannon as a villain, I need a channel that just has only movies and TV shows where he's the villain. Just on 24 hours a day. I need that.
What else are you digging up there?
I'm really into The Florida Project, which, you know, I think premiered back in Sundance, but I'm just catching up.
Fun fact, I programmed Sean Baker's very first film at Slam Dance in, like, 2004.
Prince of New York or Takeout?
Takeout.
Nice.
He knew what it was. Yes. Oh, do I know this random? It's, like, in Mandarin.
I'm a fan.
I'm glad to hear you like that, though, because I'm so excited to see that one.
Oh, it's so good. And I also love Mudbound and The Rider. Mudbound and The Rider and The Killing of a Sacred Deer. I'm looking at my list and I'm forgetting all of the ones that I love just because I've seen so many movies. But I can't say enough good things about The Rider, Mudbound, Killing of a Sacred Deer too. Wow, it's just too good.
How many movies are you seeing a day there?
I'm averaging around 5.
Damn, impressive, yo,
Iron
professional,
Woman.
Professional. Do you have a strategy? Is it like, I need to wake up and I need to see a comedy? I need to wake up and see something serious to get my mind right. Are you just like, whoa?
Yesterday, for instance, though, I switched gears. I was going to see I, Tonya, but instead I went to see The Disaster Artist because I needed something that would be a guaranteed laugh. And I loved The Disaster Artist.
Oh, I can't wait. Tell folks what that's about.
So for people who are aware of a movie called The Room, which hopefully all of you guys are aware, you know, a weird masterpiece of mishaps, from a visionary director who has no vision, and no acting ability. And it should have been a drama, but it's just the funniest movie ever made. James Franco, as with so many of us who love film, also fell in love with that movie. And decided to do a story, like a biopic of the making of it, based on one of the stars' books. He wrote like a tell-all book, Greg Sestero. And this movie is amazing how much James Franco gets into this character of Tommy Wiseau. They are identical. I'm so surprised by it. Everything is amazing.
I agree. I've seen that one and loved it. And it was both funnier than I expected, but also more of like a sincere movie than I expected. Mm. I thought it was going to sort of be a parody. And like you mentioned, The Room, I have very fond memories in LA of that was a midnight screening at the Sunset Five for a long time. And
right.
You would like go and bring spoons and stuff. And you'd be like, quoting along.
Guys in tuxedos throwing footballs around.
Yeah, and you're tearing me apart. Like, Lisa. It was a whole thing. Like, and so I went thinking it was going to be a lot sort of
campier,
schlockier. Yeah, exactly, campy. And so I found it had both more heart and commitment, but was still really funny. Mm. Yeah, it's great. It'll be really fun to see people respond to something that seems to me to have been so insular for so long. Like
yes.
That's kind of an LA like inside joke, right? And so that broadening is pretty cool.
The Room has kind of become a global phenomenon.
True.
So, and it's funny. Somebody on Twitter was saying that there's so much fake footage of The Room in The Disaster Artist that they hope that James Franco just reshot the whole movie and makes that a DVD extra.
I tried to watch The Room, y'all. I messed up. I tried to watch it by myself.
Oh, no, yeah, no, yeah. No.
And I was like, I hate everybody who has told me yeah, to watch no. this hot garbage.
No. Yeah. And that's, now like, that's just... like watching Rocky Horror by yourself. It's, you're missing the point.
All right, April, we're gonna wrap it up in a second here. Do you have any gossip for final thoughts?
God, I don't know. If you ever get a chance, go to TIFF. It is by far one of the most enjoyable festivals in Toronto. It's a lovely city.
It is.
But I have to say, I think Mudbound should win an Oscar.
Okay.
That's my parting words. I think Mudbound should win an Oscar. So.
All right. That's what's up. You heard it here. Y'all take it to the bank. Well, April, thanks for taking some time to call us from Toronto. Much appreciated.
Yes, and I'll see you guys next week.
Yes.
Yes, indeedy. All right, April, take care.
Thank Bye. You.
All right, and now it's time for our first ever fantasy film draft, a cinedraft, if you will. I'm fancy. What we're going to do is we're going to form our own losers club, and we can choose any character from a group of kids that's set in the movie in the 80s. So you guys think Goonies, Stand By Me, The Lost Boys, The Outsiders. You can draft any of the kids from Stranger Things. That's fine. As long as I can draft Tootie from Facts of Life. Tootie, where you at? We'll do three rounds. Each of us gets a draft pick for round. And once somebody's been drafted, no one else can have that person. Alonzo, you're our commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
In case anybody wants to challenge a pick or a flag gets thrown, you got that handle, son.
And one clarification.
Yes.
Am I also in this gang? Because that's
yes.
going to affect my draft.
Yes, absolutely.
If these are just like children I'm sending on a mission.
No.
But like if I'm surrounding
you have to spend
myself.
Time with them.
Yeah.
Not only are you in this draft, I need
it's
you to
super,
tell me.
Yeah. That's the Corey Feldman question, is really what I'm getting at. Yeah.
So many. That's the first of so many Corey Feldman yes. questions we will be referring to on this show. Commissioner Duralde, if you will kick this off for us, please.
I'm going to kick off with the Winona Ryder character from Lucas.
Boom, son!
Because she's not enough of an outsider in Heathers, but Lucas totally working the goth girl vibe. I'm into it.
That is solid.
That's a solid pick.
He really, once again, around the block. It's nice. It's real nice.
Don't mess with the commish.
Yeah.
Drea, you go next.
Okay, all right. So the person I'm going to lead with is someone who, if like time travel and reincarnation can happen, I'm not going to say I've thought about this a lot, but I'm not going to not say that I haven't thought about this a lot. And that's River Phoenix from Stand By Me.
No.
I have a real, and my kind of general plan is I like the sort of best friend who maybe cries sometimes when he's by himself.
Mm.
Like in these groups, that's generally, I'm like, yeah, that guy.
Mm-hmm. You want the sensitive blue collar kid who might have like a volume of Walt Whitman tucked into his
back
jeans pocket.
Oh my God, yeah, he for sure reads. Mm. And also he looks like River Phoenix. That, I don't know if I mentioned that
could
part,
not hurt.
So yeah.
Okay.
What you got?
I am going with my man Data from the Goonies.
Wow.
Yes.
That
son.
Is a smart choice.
Wow. Thank you. And you know why? Because I'm dumb. You know what I'm saying? I'm dumb and I just want to like talk shit with people and then be like, "Oh, we need like a pulley built real quick. Data, where you at?"
Yep.
Wham. He handles that.
Round two.
Yes.
Okay, so this is going to be a left field choice here, but work with me. This is from a documentary. I'm going with the amazing Freddie Pendarvis from Paris is Burning, the guy who explains that mopping is stealing. He is amazing and funny and talented and just that guy has got to be in my losers gang, no question.
I don't want to be just a girl on my team.
Sure.
I need like
mm-hmm.
other. I need another Estro.
You
got to
pass that Bechdel test.
Yes, thank you. The Bechdel test for this a fictional team is super important to me. And obviously Martha Plimpton's character from Goonies, and then the fact that it ties in like the Chris Chambers of the Stand By Me, River Phoenix. Like there's like a whole other layer of that appeals
oh, right.
to like
they
young
were a
me.
Thing. I
oh
forgot
yeah.
about that.
Yeah. So like if I'm you know. Time traveling and doing all of this other stuff, then I'm just going to go like for it. But so, yeah. So I want
so
Martha Plimpton.
You are picking somebody that you know is going to be competition for the heart of River Phoenix.
Yes, I'm uninterested in his heart.
Okay.
Like, yeah, I should have made that clear. Sorry.
Done and done.
You don't successfully lead a team by, hitting on your people. Like, I'm just building a safe space to, like, get us all through this quest.
You're creating a preteen orgy, is what it sounded like to me.
That wasn't the exercise? Sorry. I guess I went into this.
I got to start
wrong.
This whole thing over. Ricky, what do you got?
All right. Now, this is where I just get a little too excited because my body is kind of like going through changes at this age, you know? Am I also the same age in
yes.
this draft? Okay, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
yeah, yeah. Okay, so, you know, I'm new and I'm like, oh, who's that girl over there? I kind of want to let her know my name is Ricky. And they're like, yo, dude, that's Star from The Lost Boys. Whoa, son. So I'm taking my girl, Jamie Gertz, a.k.a. Star from The Lost Boys, and I'm going to be spending all my time trying to let her know my name is Ricky. I will eat some maggots with you, girl. Whatever you want. Whatever you want. That's what I'm here for. You know what I'm saying?
I like that that's your go-to seductive mood. Did someone need me to eat maggots?
I understand that's one does here.
M'lady?
Thank you. M'lady, would you care for some maggots this evening? I'll play some In Excess in the background for you.
She will always be Muffy Tepperman from Square Pegs. For
I love that you knew her name.
All right. So for my last one, this is probably, apart from Finn Wolfhard as Richie in the new It, a character that I related with to an uncomfortable degree. I don't know the character's name. I don't know the actor that plays him. But you will remember in Diner, the kid who wanders through the movie doing nothing but reciting all of the lines from Sweet Smell of Success.
Oh, my God.
That guy is rounding out my gang. Because it's always a good time to hear some Ernest Lehman.
That's amazing. Oh, your references, like, bring joy to my heart. Every just deep cut after deep cut.
All right, close us out, Drea. Who do you got?
So I'm actually, I guess my reverse engineering of having the gender disparity. So I'm going to keep my sweet, sweet River Phoenix, Chris Chambers, as the solo dude. And then I'm going to smartly introduce into my team a little paranormal power because I'm grabbing 11. Taking
Damn.
Her for myself.
Oh.
Hands off. Okay. I got it.
Lego okay. my ego.
Yeah. Plus, she has the same haircut as Chris Chambers. So aesthetically, it works. And
okay.
like, and Martha and I can have the same hair. Like, I have a whole team thing going. Yeah.
I like really it. About it. Like it.
I like this. I'm going to ride a little bit of your coattails now because I also want someone who's going to like, yo, you want to see some crazy? You want to see me do some crazy shit? Get on your bike, Ricky. I'm going to make it fly. I'm going with my man, E.T.
Nice.
You know what I'm saying?
Awesome.
You know what I'm saying? We're just going to be throwing Reese's Pieces up in the
sky.
For all
we know, E.T. is 85 years old, but I'll allow it.
Thank you.
You are the commissioner.
You know what?
Yeah.
Then I go to him for wisdom. I go to him for wisdom.
There you go.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you, commissioner. Thank you, commissioner. Well, that's our first ever Cinedraft, y'all. That was dope. That was dope. All right, we reached the point of the show now where we are going to our staff picks. Every week we ask someone on our panel to tell us about a movie we think you all should check out, whether it's streaming, in the theaters, it doesn't matter. Just a solid movie for you all. Drea, you're our guest. How about we start off with you? What movie do you recommend this week?
I recently re-went to Audrey Hepburn and Peter O'Toole.
How
to Steal a Million. And it's also one of those, and I say this with like, it's almost sacrilege because how much complaining do I do that there's not enough original movies? But I watched it and I'm like, this is the tightest indie. Like the scripting of it, like their rapport is so wonderful. It has all these double entendres and like, it's just a fun and fast, but it was so much better than I remembered. And I truly was like, oh, I could budget this in my head. I'm like, I can tell you who I could shoot this. Who can I read? And then I'm like, no, original movies. But that's a really fun one. And it's streaming. And I
think it's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. It's very fun.
So the movie that I'm recommending this week is a movie that I loved since I saw it. I believe it was my freshman year in college. And it was one of those where just goddamn blew my mind away. I saw it again when it, I haven't said it yet, I know, I saw it again. They did a special anniversary screening of it last year at the Egyptian Theater. My brilliant ass ate mushrooms before I went to go see Dog Day Afternoon.
Oh, Attica.
Attica, son. And, I mean, I can't stress enough how great of a movie that is. That's my favorite era New York of just, like,
Deuce era.
Yes, exactly. So I'm bringing it back to the Deuce. John Cazale in that movie, you know. Carol Kane.
Charles Durning
in that. Just, it's funny. It's sad as hell. It's one of those movies where when you find out what it's like, you think it's about the robbery. Mm. And then when you find out what it's really about, you're like, ugh! And, oh, goddamn. So, Dog Day Afternoon, y'all. Is it streaming? I don't know. Gather all your pennies and go to Best Buy and pay for that shit like a grown-ass person would. Okay? It's that good. Dog Day Afternoon, yo.
It's an investment property.
Yes.
Absolutely. It belongs in every library.
Well, I feel much better about my recommendation.
You did really well.
Thank you. I was excited to say all of that. I'm assuming last week
you did like Rush Hour or something.
I did Madea Goes to Prison. I don't know what I was thinking. But I still stand by it, though. Okay, excellent. Next week, when we come back, we will be discussing the movie Mother, Darren Aronofsky's. It looks like a happy, just a hilarious little movie.
It's a gay romp.
We will be discussing Mother, so I would say, hey, everybody out there listening, go to the theater. Go see Mother. When you come back, you'll know what we're talking about. Drea, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. That was super fun.
Drea Clark in the building, yo. Alonzo Duralde, thank you for being here,
sir.
Thank
you, as always.
Absolutely. My pleasure. My pleasure. I've been your host, Ricky Carmona. Thank you all out there for listening to Who Shot Ya? If you like what you're hearing, you want to leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts, I won't stop you. In fact, I'll say give us 5 stars.
5 stars.
5 stars. 5 estrellas, por favor. And next week, we'll pledge our love for you, yo. We will pledge our love for you. Also, if you have any movie recommendations that you think we should check out, tweet it to us at WhoShotYaPod or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer of Who Shot Ya is Casey O'Brien. What? Our senior producer is Laura Switcher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. That's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.